All right. I always get a lot of people messaging me, asking me how I find the best deals for my flips and my long-term and short-term rentals. Well, I'm going to tell you how I do it. I direct source properties utilizing a company called PropStream. PropStream is an amazing, amazing platform. It allows the user to combine any number of criteria and extract a list of properties that meets an exact investment profile. They have nationwide coverage for all kinds of cool, you know, lists like pre-foreclosures, bank-owned properties, high equity, vacant properties, tax, IRS, utility liens, and so on and so forth. It is just such an incredible platform. I mean, you know, this is how I locate my on and off market properties. I generate lead lists. I vet my properties. I assess my risk, calculate feasibility, and so on. Like, if you guys aren't using PropStream, you really, really should. So go to https://trial.propstreampro.com/REI Society. So basically, trial.propstreampro.com/REI Society. And that's going to get you a 7-day free trial. Go ahead and sign up today. Welcome and hello, everybody. This is the REI Society podcast, where we are informing you everything real estate and business related so that you can be successful in REI investing. We're sharing the tools, tips, and stories from people who have already made it. And my name is Brandon Thompson, your host. Each week, we'll bring extraordinary guests so that you can learn real estate from the best. Good morning or good afternoon or evening, whenever you're listening to this. This week, I have a really special guest. They're all special. This guy specifically is the all-star investor, Mr. Ryan Pineda. He is in Vegas. He's flipping over 100 plus homes a year. I think last year he did 150. This year he's aiming to do 100. And we're going to talk about his processes and things like that. And then if you listen to this and you subscribe to his channel, his YouTube channel in specific, I think it's all-star investor, If you take a snapshot of your subscription on your phone and put that in your Insta stories as a share and tag myself and Mr. Ryan Pineda, that would be fantastic. Because if you do, the first three people that do it, I am going to send a copy of Ryan's book, Flip Your Future, to you in the mail from Amazon. So can't wait for you to share this. And I definitely can't wait for you to listen up to this interview. So here we go. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Just sitting here in quarantine. How you doing?
Doing excellent, man. Georgia is one of the guinea pig states. We are out of quarantine, I guess, for the state. A lot of people think we are crazy, but those hot lanterns, I guess they just want to get out and about. So we got rush hour traffic back again. People wearing a mask when you go to restaurants, even though you can go to restaurants and stuff like that. So things are changing. But you guys are still in, I guess, recommended quarantine, right?
Yeah, until at least May 15th. I'm curious how it's going for you guys. Have you guys seen any change with the people, like how they're reacting, being in public again?
Yeah. Lots of people are wearing masks. A lot of people are definitely staying away from you. They're cautious. So, I mean, I'm not seeing any change as far as how we were living in quarantine to now. A lot less people are out and about, which is good. But I think there's starting to be a lot of pent up demand after everything's been shut down for 6 weeks. People are just rushing to go get out and about again. So it's a little bit of mix and match. People are being more precautious now, but it's definitely insane. But look, I wanted to have you on the show today just because, A, I found you online and heard from you from a good friend. Patrick Miller asked me to give him a shout out. So that's your shout out, Patrick. Anyways, I know he went to one of your masterminds, if I'm not mistaken, and just said you were an awesome guy. I got to meet you in person. So with that said, yeah, man, you have four companies and you are only 31, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Just turned 31 during quarantine, yep.
And you've been doing this for 10 years already.
It's crazy to think about it, man. But yeah, it's crazy.
So you started off as a young man while you were a professional baseball player for the A's. And I know you've talked about this a lot, but why don't you tell me a little bit about this, how that started going into baseball. Actually, talk to us about going into baseball. Like you, I'm sure, I don't know if I haven't heard anybody talk to you about your youth yet. So let's talk to you about your youth. Tell us the story and give us the longer version of how you get into baseball and how you get into real estate.
Man, the longer version. Every time I go on podcast, I always try and speed it up. It's like the first time I ever did a podcast, I like gave the whole story. And then I was like, all right, how do I make this like as quick as possible so you can get in the juicy stuff? But, you know, growing up, all I wanted to do was play baseball, dude. I literally didn't have any backup plan. You know, I grew up playing Little League. I grew up playing travel ball. I was on multiple teams always. And I was always either the best or one of the best players on the team. So it's not like, you know, I had this crazy story of how I just one day I was just naturally talented at it. I was a quick grower. I mean, I have not grown since I was like 13 or 14 years old. I've been 5'10 since that age. So I thought I was going to be like this beast. And then all of a sudden come, when I'm like 18, I'm like, yeah, I think I'm done growing. Like I haven't grown in like 4 years. And you know, that was fine, whatever. But it was just funny because, you know, growing up, I was bigger than a lot of the kids. And so I was more talented and it led me to be in baseball. And now that I'm older now, I look back at it and I'm like, man, I see how some people develop confidence because you develop it at a young age, I think. And I had people praising me and, you know, always telling me I was so good and so great when I was young. And I grew up believing that. And so it made me like have confidence in no matter what field I went in, whether it was school, whether it was business or real estate, I'm like, I'm going to do this. Like I've been the best my whole life at doing stuff. Like I might as well just do it. And now that I have a son, I have a 1-year-old and a second on the way. It makes me realize like how important it is to build up confidence, not on the side of like egotistical. And I don't want any of that. I just said to sound egotistical, but that's just the reality of what it was growing up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's important to develop confidence and being really good at something young because I think I see so many people who are just very indecisive, you know, not confident in what they're doing. And so they second guess everything they do. And thankfully for me, growing up in the sports environment and the baseball environment, it wasn't like that. You know, in sports, it's like you make decisions like this, you know, or you ain't going to hit the ball, you ain't going to field the ball and make the play. So I was always just growing up in that field, training every day, trying to be the best I could be, literally competing every single day, playing games, spotlight always on me. So growing up in that environment was much different than most people. And thankfully, you know, I progressed. I made varsity as a freshman in high school. I was playing shortstop and batting third. So I was like, dude, I mean, like I had success at no matter what I was doing. And then I got a scholarship and became an All-American in college and, you know, all these things. And then I got drafted. And honestly, it's kind of funny because the draft was something that I had been working my whole life for. But I don't know if I ever talked about this. It was actually like one of the worst days of my life because I was training for, you know, 21 years. To get drafted. And, you know, my goal was to be a first round draft pick, high draft pick, make a lot of money, yada, yada, yada. And my draft day, I ended up going in the 28th round, which is not good. I mean, you know, I'm happy to be drafted and everything, but I was super disappointed. And, you know, I went from thinking I'm going to get drafted and making millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars to signing for $20,000. You know, not a big sum of money at all. That was tough. And it was also tough because I had an agent at the time. And, you know, you think your agent's going to be advising you. You're, you know, 21-year-old kid who doesn't do business transactions. And I didn't get good advice. You know, I don't think he had my best interest really. And, you know, I was turning down teams because I was so disappointed and disgruntled. Like I was getting calls in like the 8th, 9th round. And I was like, nah, don't even draft me. You know, like I want more money. When in reality, I should have just said, hey, yeah, draft me. Once they draft you, now you negotiate. You know, it's like putting a seller under contract. You don't like you get the deal and then you start like figuring out what's next, you know? And I didn't know what I was doing. My agent should have been doing that. The team should have been calling my agent, but they weren't. They were calling me directly. And I'm like, no, I want more money. I want more money. And I ended up costing myself a lot of money, costing myself, you know, way deep in the draft. And it led me down this path of, for the first time in baseball, like really just like, dude, this was supposed to be like the big moment. And it was like a disaster. It really was a disaster. I was pissed. I was super pissed. I told, you know, the Oakland A's drafted me and I could have went 20 rounds earlier. And I told them, I go, I'm not signing with you guys, dude. I'm not signing. And this was the immaturity in me talking. And I said, I'm going back to school. You know, I'm a junior. I got one more year left. I'm going back to school. So I held out. I was one of those players that held out and I didn't sign. And throughout the summer, I went to go play summer baseball in Alaska. So, I mean, that was a great experience and I had fun doing that. I wouldn't have got to do that had I gotten drafted and signed. So I'll always appreciate, you know, spending a summer in Alaska. But, you know, as I was going on throughout the year, my coach at my college got fired. And, you know, he had been my coach for 3 years. And, you know, we had our ups and downs with him as the coach. We butted heads a lot just because I didn't like the way he... Once again, I was immature and he wasn't the greatest coach either. So, I mean, let's get real on both sides. After that, I just was like, man, do I want to like go back to school and deal with this crap again? And by then I was just, it was funny. You were talking about faith and I'm very open about my faith. They had a team in the league, in the summer ball league I was in who, you know, was a Christian team. They're called Athletes in Action. And I remember I was talking to one of the guys. I was playing shortstop. He was on runner on second base. And he was like, dude, I heard you got drafted. Like, what are you doing here? And I was like, I don't know, dude. Like, I'm trying to get more money. Like, you know, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I might go back to school. And he was like, dude, if I ever got drafted, I wouldn't even hesitate. Like, you know, and it like opened up my eyes. I was like, man, you know, what am I doing? Like, at the end of the day, like, how much do I think, like, why am I doing this? Am I doing it for more money? Am I doing it out of pride? Like, I had to really check myself. And I think maybe like a couple of days after that, I called up the A's and I was like, I'll sign. Like, what do we got to do? And that was it, man. But that's how I ended up in professional baseball. I don't think I've ever told that story.
Oh, man, I'm glad you told us something you haven't talked about before. You feel like that was a hasty decision on your behalf, on your part?
Like, to sign?
Yeah. Just like that. Just like that.
Dude, I've made decisions like that my whole life. Like, you know, when I make a decision, it's usually quick. I don't dwell on it. Like, if I have to dwell on it, then it's probably a bad decision. Yeah. You know, and so at the end of the day, I've always, even buying houses, like if you send me a deal, I'm not going to look at the deal for like, you know, more than 5 minutes, to be quite honest. Like, I'll look at it for 5 minutes. I'm like, the numbers work. Let's do the deal. Like, what are we going to do? Yeah. Even my personal house, like a really big decision, right? I looked at it and I'm like, that's the house. Yeah. Let's do it. And that's how I've always been.
Yeah, that's the same way I am too. I mean, it's gotten me into some mistakes in the past. I've lost some money on some transactions. I mean, you're bound to lose a little bit of money when you flip 15. I don't even know the number anymore, but last time I counted, it was like 1500. I just stopped counting from there. But right. A lot of that was with a former business partner. But you lose money on some, but thank God you're doing volume. Like, we were doing 150 homes a year at one point, right? And we had the volume and could make up for the losses. But anyways, bringing it back to you, do you feel like the stuff that you learn from being in sports, your upbringing and things like that, do you feel like that has actually helped you become who you are? Obviously, it probably has, but do you feel like that it's allowed you to do really, really well and excel in your businesses that you have today?
Absolutely, man. I think in my mind, I still think I'm an athlete, you know, like I've been retired like less than 3 years. So for me, it's still like pretty fresh. And I think that so many of these guys in business, I mean, you look at it on one hand and people say, well, business, you know, it's everybody wants to be lovey-dovey. And it's like, you know, it's not competition. You know, we're all here for each other and this and that. It's like, yeah, we are. Like, no doubt about it. I love collaborating. I love doing deals with other guys. But at the same time, you know, business is competition. Like, this is a competitive environment. Like, if, you know, you, I mean, it just really is. And at the end of the day, like, I'm very, very competitive. Yeah. And it took one of my business coaches to help me realize that, because he was like, look, dude, like, there's nothing wrong with being competitive. He's like, you know, people want to, you know, we live in this, I don't know, PC world where it's, you know, you don't want to talk about it. It's like, he's like, dude, that's what drives you to become better and to push, to really lead to new levels and to do this. Like, you know, be competitive. That's who you are. And I was like, you know what? When I was playing baseball, we had guys on the other team who are, you know, they're my friends, and, you know, we're playing the game and, you know, we're buddies off the field, but come game time, like, we want to be competitive and, you know, I want to beat him. And so it is what it is.
Yeah. Why play even a board game when you can't dominate? Right. I mean, if I'm not getting mad when I'm playing Monopoly, what's the point of playing? Like,
right. I mean, and it's not like I'm going to get mad when somebody else does good and is winning. Like, you know, if my boy, you know, hits a home run against our team after the game, and be like, dude, that was tight. Like, dude, congrats. Like, you killed it. We always did that. But at the same time, it's like, I want to hit two home runs then. You know, if he hit one, I want to hit two.
Yeah. Well, so you are the author of Flip Your Future, the book. I haven't read it yet. I'm going to read it. I'm always looking. You know, there was a part of me being in this business for so long. Like, there's nobody that can teach me anything new based on my years of experience, the number of transactions I've done, dealing with private capital, real estate investors from all over the world, funding money to me. Like, there's nothing new I can learn. And then I finally hit a plateau about 2 years ago. My business partner and I looked at each other like, you know what? We're done. Like, we love each other, but, you know, we're going to run off and do this independently and so on and so forth. And we ended amicably. And I talked about that here and there, but, which was great. You know, it's good to keep a friend after a long business. A lot of people, don't have that business relationship, but I've learned in the last couple of years, the more I research real estate, the more I learn about it and talk to people in these podcasts and reading books and things like that, there's always room to grow. Even if some of it is stuff that I know, maybe somebody's done something in a different fashion than I have. So little birdie named Patrick told me that you're really, really good at raising money. So what's some tidbits you have for the people that are listening, the audience that's listening, about raising money?
Yeah, man. Patrick needs to quit giving away all my secrets, man.
We're trying to get you to give away those secrets.
No, it's good. It's funny because when I first started, I talk about this a lot, that I didn't have anybody I knew with money. You know, it was 2010. No one had money that I was 21 years old. And then even in 2015, when I was like, you know what, I'm going to flip. That was when I realized, like, hey, hard money can they will fund your deal if you have a good enough deal. In my mind, I thought I needed a 30-year loan on every single house I bought. It didn't even cross my mind that there was this in between. I was like, you need a 30-year loan or you need cash. That's it. And once I realized there was this gray area where these hard money lenders and these private money lenders were hanging out, I was like, dude, that's what I've been looking for. So my first, like, 30 flips were strictly just hard money and my credit cards. I maxed out all my credit cards to buy all my deals. And that was good. Luckily, I didn't lose any money on any deals because I was very safe. I'm like, dude, I can't be loose with my money. I have only me to fall back on this. I didn't have a partner or anything. And in 2017, that was when I finally got my first private money lender. And I told him, I go, yo, my biggest hurdle is money. Like, if I didn't have to worry about making these mortgage payments or covering these rehabs, I could buy so many more deals. Like, I know I could. He's like, fine. He's like, I'll fund the purchase, the rehab. You don't have to make me any monthly payments. If that's what you think's gonna, you know, propel you, then let's do it. I was like, perfect. And I met him in church. And, you know, to this day, he still lends me money. And we've made millions together. And, you know, he's led me to other private money guys. So, you know, I guess tip number one would be, once you get that first guy really you know, treat them right, you know, give them a good return, be quick with their money, you know, just keep turning it over and over again. And, you know, he's going to tell his buddies about it, you know, at the end of the day, because it makes him look smarter. Like everybody wants to, you know, be given investment advice. Like, look, dude, I got this guy. He flips houses. It's crazy. Like, this is what I made. Like, people love talking about what they've made. Yeah, and he's not like that. He's not like that, but he wants to help his friends.
Right. Dude, you're right. You're right about that. I don't mean to cut you off, but it sets off a chain reaction. One really wealthy individual makes a double-digit return, like clockwork. Well, I mean, I don't know if you're paying your investors double digits, but let's just say it's 10%. You don't have to give any trade secrets away.
When I first started, I was paying him 3 points and 12%. So he was loving it.
He finally negotiated it down. Yeah, man. But yeah. You make them good money and they're completely hands-off and all they do is send wires, $15 wire at best, and they're making great money each year in yield. Like, why wouldn't we do it? And then they're going to tell all their rich buddies. And next thing you know, boom.
Right.
You know, it's done. Your business is made overnight. So that's a good point. Were you gonna add anything else to that before I...
Yeah, I mean, so that would be my first one. Like, once you find that first guy, treat him right. And, you know, whether he does it on his own or you, you know, put it in his ear. Like, look, man, if you got anyone else you know with money, let me know. Mm-hmm. I've had other guys who do that and then they'll go and broker their friend's money, you know, and be the middleman. Like, I'm like, I don't care. Like, as long as I pay what, you know, I pay you however much you can raise the money for me, that's fine. So like, your private money guys can also become fundraisers for you. Mm-hmm. I would say another thing that I like to do is really just show my wins on social media. And I don't do it as much anymore because we do so many and I don't want people to think I'm annoying. But when I was starting out, every single flip I did, I was promoting. You know, I would be like, hey, here's some before and afters. You know, I would even show profits. I'd be like, look, we bought this house for X. You know, here's all our costs. We sold it. We made $30,000. It's crazy. And, you know, I would do that a few times. And then every so often, I'd be like, hey, if you want to get involved in this, let me know.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, you'd have people be like, okay, what's that look like? And, you know, so I think showing proof, not in a boastful way, but just in, hey, here's the facts, here's what I do. And, you know, you're going to get a lot of people who want to give you money because they're like, man, okay, this guy's legit. You know, I don't know where else to put my money. And I did a video on this too, like even before coronavirus got so bad. I think I did the video in February when I was starting to really hear about coronavirus. I was like, watch, people are going to be taking money out of stocks and they're going to be looking for where to put their money. And this was before it crashed. And, you know, sure enough, stock market crashed, you know, people trying to figure out what the heck to do because interest rates are so low. They can't get a return that way. Stocks are, yeah, they're low right now, but I don't know many people who are feeling really good about, you know, having their money in there right now versus if you give them this opportunity where you're like, look, this is a guaranteed 8-10%, whatever you want to give them. They're like, okay, you know, I actually get something. If this all goes to crap, at least I got a house still there.
Exactly. Well, so I completely agree with all that. Let's talk about your companies. Yeah, so you're 31, you've been doing this for 10 years, or you've been flipping for 5 years, you've been in real estate for 10 years. You walked away from baseball knowing that this is your future. And
right.
I feel like that was a smart move. Not saying that you weren't a good baseball player, but I feel like more people have created wealth with real estate than baseball. So that, right. You know, kudos for you on that. But now, just in a short span of 5 years, from what I'm seeing, you're all over the place. You just made the cover of Think Realty magazine, which you know, thank you for, you know, sharing your story in there. I saw you posted on Instagram. I think it was yesterday, and it was last night. I was reading through it. It's a great article.
Thank you.
You have four companies: the education company, Future Flipper. Your flipping company, Home Run Offer. If I'm wrong about this, correct me if I'm wrong. Your brokerage, Forever Home Realty, with your business partner, Nick.
Yep.
And True Books, an accounting company.
Right.
Tell me about your accounting company. I don't hear you talk about this much. So what's going on there?
Yeah. So we started that company actually this year in January. And you know, really what it came down to was these last 5 years, I think I've had 3 or 4 different accounts. It's like, dude, I can't ever find anyone who's either responsive throughout the year, somebody who gets things done quick, somebody who is a hustler, somebody who is willing to, you know, whatever, go in the gray area and do the things that, you know, we got so many different transactions going on. It's like there's ways to, you know, lower our tax bill and to do things right. And the other part was my KPIs were never good. Like I could never, ever keep my books straight. I was just busy making deals and, you know, doing things. And every time I'd go to look at the books, I'm like, you know what? We got money in the bank account looking good. I don't really know what's working or not, but I know, you know, we're making money. And that's where the name came from, TrueBooks, because most people don't really understand the truth behind what their company's doing. They don't understand their net profit. They don't understand what marketing's working. They don't understand really anything other than the gross profit, if they're lucky. Like that's the, you know, a lot of people don't even know gross profit. And then it's like, oh boy. Yeah, so we started that in January because I met Matt, my business partner in that company, over a year ago. And he was a guy who was messaging, young guy. He's like a little younger than me, but he's been an accountant for, I don't know, 7, 8 years, worked at those big accounting firms. And, you know, he worked his way. And he had been DMing me on Instagram for like a year. Just, you know, one of these guys who would DM me all the time questions or whatever. And he's like, if you ever need tax help at all, let me know. And I'm like, I'm good, dude. I got an accountant, you know. And to be honest, I was kind of biased because he was young. So I was like, dude, I need somebody who's got experience and, you know, understands what I'm trying to do. Like, you know, no offense, I'm a young guy, but you don't have experience. And sure enough, you know, my accountant with experience was giving me headache like all the time. She just never would get things done. You know, I'd be like I told her, I was like, okay, in 2019, I need a bookkeeper. And I was like, we're too big. We have to have better books. January comes. She's like, okay, we're going to get it. February comes. I'm like, where's the bookkeeper? March comes. I'm like, you know, like we're supposed to file taxes here soon. I still don't even have a bookkeeper. And finally, I fired her. And, you know, Matt had been messaging. I go, you know what, dude, I'll meet you. And, you know, I meet him at my office for the first time ever after like a year of DMing. And instantly, I liked him. I was like, this dude's a hustler. You know, I start throwing him like curveballs. I'm like, hey, what would you do based on this? What would you do based on this? Tell me like, what would you, and he was like, this is how you would do it. Here's how I would set you up. I was like, okay. So I had him do my 2018 taxes and we made a lot of money in 2018 and I didn't pay that much in taxes. I'll just leave it at that. Like I was very happy with how it came out. And, you know, I was like, dude, this guy's legit. And the other funny thing was just with me on social media and people knowing me, every year come tax time, everyone always asks me, who's your accountant? You know, let me get your accountant and blah, blah, blah. And up to that point, I'd always said, oh, well, here's who I use. And I gave her so much business. It was crazy. And, you know, once I fired her and I hired Matt, you know, I was referring him too, but then it just clicked in me one day. I'm like, why am I referring out all this business when I could just start a business? And so him and I had a conversation about it because he was just working for, you know, one of these big companies. I go, why don't we just start our own thing, dude? I was like, I can easily funnel in all these real estate people and we just focus on the real estate niche and funnel them into the company. He's like, I'm down. And well, he wasn't down like I'm down, like where, you know, I'm like, I have a good idea, let's do it. He was like an accountant and like, running the numbers, being a nerd and doing his thing. And, you know, after a while, he's like, okay, and as long as I can make this amount and then, you know, we can get X number of clients. And I'm like, dude, it'll happen. Like, whatever, dude, it'll happen. Don't worry. You know, so it ended up working out great because number one, you know, now I get him full time as not only our bookkeeper, but like, you know, everything. So he knows all our books, CFO, bookkeeper, everything. And then on the other hand, all these people that are already in my coaching program at my real estate brokerage who follow me on social media, they're all just, you know, being funneled to it. And I just don't really know of any accounting firms that are just nationwide, real estate specific, all this stuff. And so that was why I started it, because I was creating all of these things for me. I was like, dude, this is what I need to see. This is what, you know, I need to see every month, every quarter, you know, balance sheet wise, all this stuff. And why don't we just offer it to everyone? You know, because I know everyone else needs this too. Everyone else's books are a mess, 9 out of 10 people. Yeah. So that was how it came about.
That's awesome, man. Well, dude, congrats on that. I wish I had known about this. Well, I guess you didn't have it last year. I was about to say, last year I was going through the same thing. I finally found somebody on my side of town that's not doing it quite like you're doing it, obviously, but definitely somebody I just definitely needed. And I was going through the same problems. So look, you are an all-star. Obviously, I'm sure that's why you gave yourself that handle on Instagram and board. But yeah, you're crushing it, man. Your social media specifically is on point. Looks like you're doing all kinds of videos. You got videos everywhere. Your YouTube channel, you got 3 videos and like 500 and something followers. You're just like relaunching it, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
From what I'm seeing, you're all over the place, and I don't even have sponsored ads coming my way trying to target me through you. So once you start targeting ads, you know, to people like myself, like, you're going to be really all over the place. But this, some of the stuff you're talking about on your social media, like, just, I mean, even of the times, like, you just got $100,000 from the SBA from a PPP loan. But
right.
Fantastic information. Building that up to say you've got an education company and you're definitely helping people, obviously with a book and then with the mastermind and the digital courses. Where do you get time to sleep? When do you get time to sleep?
Yeah, man. YouTube's about to be my real focus. You know, it's funny, man, because when I first started this, I come out of baseball in 2017 and I'm like, okay, what am I going to do with my life? Because I had spent my whole entire life training for baseball half the time. Well, like, I'd be in Vegas training and then doing some real estate, you know, whatever. And then I would go leave for 6 months and play baseball. So I literally like was gone for half my life in this city. And then when I retired, I go, dude, what do I fill that time with? Like, I'm so used to like being a pretty good real estate investor while playing baseball. Now I have so much free time. Like, so in my mind, I had like all the time in the world. And baseball forced me to be very efficient with my movements and my actions, not only in baseball, right? Like, one slight movement that's wrong makes you foul tip a ball versus get a hit. Right. And so I was always very like, hey, how do I become so efficient in all my movements, both physically, you know, mentally, emotionally, all these things. And so in business, I immediately stop doing things that I knew took up a lot of time. And so like going to projects, that takes freaking forever. You know, I realized the things that took forever. And I was like, okay, I could be cold calling sellers, but that's also like something that takes forever. Like, I'm not going to do that. So I literally focused on like the highest income producing activities right out of the gate. So that made me really accelerate quick. And when I realized I had very busy work tasks, I hired somebody to do them. And so now I still have that same approach. You know, I look at all my businesses and I look at, you know, how I want to live my life and the structure I want to have. And I make it work. Like, I basically have a priority stack of things that I have to do. And so like, for me, it's every morning I have the same exact thing in the morning. You know, I work out, I read, I pray, I journal, I, meditate, like, I do all these things. And so it's like, and if you look at my calendar, when my guys book stuff for me, it says that from 6 to 9 a.m., you can't even try and book anything because I have to do that stuff before I do anything else in the day. Right. And then, you know, from 10 to 5 is my dedicated work hours. After 5 o'clock, it's family time. It don't matter if I got what I was supposed to get done or not, but I just know that from five on, I'm spending time with family. And weekends, I don't work. So we're not going to be going in the office. I'm not going on appointments. I'm not doing any of that. So I have literally 35 hours a week that I'm able to work, you know, doing stuff. And so I look at that and I'm like, well, I got 4 companies. I got 35 hours I'm able to work. how can I make this so efficient, the best use of my time, so that I can still live the lifestyle I want to live? And I think, you know, once you finally get your priorities straight, you can really figure out what are the things that are most important to you. Because you know, like a lot of people, they'll just, if they don't get it done, they just work later. So that's the answer. It's like, okay, well, let's work for, well, I'm not coming home tonight for dinner. I got to finish up this last task. Or the next day they'll say, dude, I got to go into work early, you know, so I can't work out today. I can't, you know, do my routine today because I got to finish the stuff. Whereas I'm like, nope, those are not negotiable. So whatever I get done in this limited amount of time, the game's over. You know, the game's 9 innings. This is all I got. Like, if I didn't get a hit in the 9 innings, so be it.
Dude, that's awesome, man. I mean, you know, I think I heard in your podcast, you had an acronym. Was it RAISE? RAISE?
Yep.
Tell us about RAISE.
Yeah, so RAISE is a concept I came up with last year because I was really trying to think about what it is I was doing, because I had this question a lot. They're like, how the heck are you doing all these things? And I was like, man, I don't know. Maybe I should write a book on it or something. And I thought about it and I was like, you know what? This acronym defines perfectly what my life's about. And, you know, it comes out to RAISE, and at our new office, I'm going to get it all on the wall and it's going to be really cool. But, you know, R stands for relationships. A stands for assets. I stands for intellect. S stands for spirit. E stands for exercise. Now, all those things, you know, can have different meanings for different people. Relationships. What are you doing with your family, your friends, your coworkers? How are you treating them? You know, are you spending time with people, or are you, you know, just neglecting that part? Like, relate. God didn't make us to be, you know, by ourselves, just, you know, only worrying about us. Like, he called us to be in relationships. Assets, you know, that can include your investments, your job, you know, what are you doing to make money? Like, that's important. You know, it's, I'm not telling anybody don't make money. Like, you got to focus on that too. Intellect. So that's self-development. You know, are you reading books? Are you going to seminars? Are you hiring coaches? Like, what are you doing to grow your mind and all that? Because I've learned for me that in baseball, I hired coaches. In business, I've hired coaches. Like, you only know what you know. You know, so I got to learn from all these other people who, whether they've done more than me or not, like you were saying at the beginning of this, there's only so much I know. I don't know it all. And then S for spirit, you know, I know there's a lot of people who aren't spiritual or don't have faith, and that's fine. But, you know, God's real and he's an important part of my life. And, you know, you got to show your faith and you got to put time towards that. And then lastly, exercise. You know, that's health, fitness, whatever you want to call it. You got to treat your body right. And a lot of people, especially, unfortunately, when people actually have business success, a lot of their health goes on the wayside because they start indulging. And I've been guilty of this. I'm like eating at nice restaurants and buying whatever I want. You know, before when I was a minor leaguer making $1,200 a month, it was like, hey, I can't even eat out if I wanted to. I got to make food and I got to be healthy and do it. But then you start making money and you're like, dude, I can eat whatever I want. This is great, you know, or like I was talking about earlier, they neglect working out. And I was afraid of that too when I first, when I retired, I was like, dude, what's going to motivate me to work out? Because it used to be for playing sports, but now it's like, what do I need to work out for as a normal guy? But I enjoy it. So that's kind of our philosophy, is like, it's not just about business, but it's also not just about, you know, going to the gym only. Like, you got to make money. You got to devote your time to self-development. You got to devote your time to your family and your friends. You got to devote your time to God. Like, all of these things have to be in balance to live a balanced life.
All right, guys. This sponsor is REI Society itself. REISociety.com Mastermind is where I want you to go as soon as we get done with this episode. Or go ahead and book the link right now on your phone or laptop, wherever you're listening to this. This is where I'm doing a 30-day real estate investment virtual bootcamp mastermind. It combines the exact strategies I've used to triple my income and design my real estate career. It's a virtual mastermind about creating clarity, taking massive action, and getting tangible results. There's no travel required. You can do everything from the comfort of your smartphone or laptop. What I do need from you is full engagement towards the realizations of your goals. You're going to learn about wholesaling, flipping, rentals, and short-term rentals. Basically, creating an income from thin air while never utilizing your own money. Learn how to, you know, determine values correctly, work with contractors without getting hurt, design a home quickly and to sell a property quickly like a pro. Learn how to use the Burr method and build a long-lasting portfolio so that you can have passive income and create long-lasting wealth. And then how to build a multi-million dollar portfolio and how to become a five-star super host quickly in short-term rentals if you're interested in that side of the game. We'll help you set up your office, your digital office, set up marketing so you can get more leads, acquisitions, finance, construction, management, liquidations, and you also get a 30-day mentorship by yours truly and my wife, Tiffany, in a closed Facebook group. You're going to get all my documents, all my lenders, everything. Go to reisociety.com/mastermind right now and sign up today. And right now, because of these unprecedented times, we're giving a 20% discount on our cost of the classes. Thank you. Yeah, I love how you bring your faith in, and it sounds like your focus is zoned in to the T. I mean, honestly, you look at your Instagram, like I've been watching it a lot lately. It just draws you in, but you're working. I mean, everything you're saying, you're working out, you're showing people, you're living the life that you're saying that you are by example. You're leading people by example, and you're doing what you say. Do you feel like that is important in business to do what you say you're going to do?
Yeah, man. I mean, how many people do you see that you just like this freaking guy? Like, he's always talking this crap and he's just a hypocrite. Right. You don't ever do what he says. And, then you have those guys who say, well, yeah, do as I say, not as I do. Right. And it's like, I ought to do as I slap you in the face right now. People are going to follow a leader who they respect. And the way to get people's respect is to do the right things and actually say what you're going to do. Take responsibility for your actions. You know, I think that's why we've been successful. It's just I'm able to lead a lot of companies because I have their respect. And they know that, you know, I'm not just focused on me and the money. Like, I'm focused on them as people. I'm focused on their development too. A lot of my guys work out with me. A lot of my guys go to church with me. A lot of my guys, you know, read the same books as me. Like, we're all in this together trying to just live a more balanced life and grow. It's not just about how do we make money at work. It's far deeper than that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I definitely agree with that. Have you ever felt like entrepreneurship is a lonely sport, or do you just feel like, I mean, you're leading up to that. I know it's kind of like an adverse question to what you're just saying, but you ever feel like you being the leader, you're the one running the show, like you have the battlefield of the mind. I think Joyce Meyer wrote a book about it. I read it like years ago, but you have the battlefield of the mind. Like, entrepreneur is a lonely sport because you're the one that's accountable for all these people, all these systems, your wife, your kid, your newborn coming up.
Right.
Congrats, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. All of that stuff. Like, do you feel like that sometimes? Like, it is a lonely sport, or do you not have that problem?
Honestly, I'd be lying to you if I said I felt like that. Because I know that I'm on the minority side of that. I've talked to many, many entrepreneurs and CEOs and people who have their companies, and yeah, I mean, they have a lot of stress and anxiety. Especially right now, right? There's so much crazy stuff going on. And then yeah, people look at that. Honestly, I don't right now. Like, I feel good. I feel like we're in a good spot with where we're at. In fact, I feel like we're in a better spot than we've ever been in, mainly because we, once again, back to competition. We don't have the competition anymore. Everyone's run away. We're sitting on a good cash position. We got a lot of cash. I've raised a lot of private money. I'm still positive on, you know, the things that we've bought. We're sitting on a bunch of good assets that we bought deep. So I feel good. I feel good knowing that I've been taking the right steps up to this point to prepare us for this. And I'm actually making a YouTube video on the recession. I wrote an article for Forbes like 7 months ago. And you could probably just link to it in the podcast. It was about a recession that was coming. I said, and seven months ago, I said, hey, at some point, this recession is coming. I don't know how it's going to happen or why it's going to happen, but it's inevitable. And I had a lot of people send me some messages like, you're an idiot, you know, this. I'm like, guys, I understand our economy looks good right now. But the reason I actually wrote it was because we had the inverted yield curve like 7 months ago. And I have an economics degree, so I like to watch that stuff. And I was like, this is always a sign for a recession. And I don't know what's going to happen, but you know, this is what it is. And the article basically was about, here's what happens to a real estate investor during a recession. And I said, well, here's the wholesaler, the flipper, the seller, lenders, contractor, like here's how every single person gets affected. And I'm not going to go into all of the, you guys can read the article, but at the end of it, it was basically like, hey, if you have cash, you're going to be like killing it during a recession. Because everyone else who had cash back in 2010, you already know, you have like no competition. Like there's houses everywhere you could buy, you know? And every single person I talked to back then, they're like, dude, just wait until, like, that's when the real money is made. That's when businesses thrive in this business, like, you know, the ones who have cash. You know, it's not the wholesalers who thrive. The whole, like, I've never heard one person tell me back in 2010, I wish I would have wholesaled more houses. I wish I would have been a better agent. Like, no, that said no one ever. What everyone said was, I wish I would have had money and bought more houses. That's what they all say. And
dude, you're right.
You would know better than me. I wasn't buying then. But I took that to heart and I said, you know what? I'm starting to prepare as if this is coming. I'm liquidating things. I'm raising money so that when it does happen, I'm going to be in position. That's why I feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with you. I saw a recession coming just like you. I told my business partner, I said, we need to sell the 100 rentals that we have. We ended up parting ways. I got bored, you know, pocketed a good bit of money. I'm like, okay, let me get back into flipping. I'm not retiring at 37 or I guess 35 back then. So with that said, it's like, what do you do? I saw so many people back during the recession in 2008 that made so much money buying low, renting them out after a couple of repairs and then selling them high. So I decided I just want to do that. I'm going to get prepared for, you know, the real wealth. So the people that bought the homes in 2009, that held them up until 2015 to 2018, or even now, like they're the ones that have made just incredible amounts of money. I saw with, even with ourselves buying from 2012 to, or I guess 2010 to 2015, like, man, I wish I had more money back then. I wish I had more cash. I wish I had timed it even better. I just didn't have that kind of capital back in 2009 that I did in, let's just say 2012. If I had that capital then in a time like now, let's just say in real estate, you have a 6-month lag behind an economic downturn. So let's just say fall, we have a lot of foreclosures and things like that. That would be a good time to get into the game, especially if you're cash heavy. What's your viewpoint on that? Do you feel like, I guess that was a loaded just ramble, but you feel like that's like you're glad that you're, well, obviously you just said you were, you're glad that you're prepared. You are timing it, and or you feel like you're about ready to make a mark if the market dips?
Yeah, man. Like I said, that's why I have not felt the stress and anxiety that others are feeling. And you know, I like you just said on YouTube, I just got $100,000 from the PPP loan. I'm feeling really good as of yesterday. But no, like it's good, man. And with the way our business is set up too, a lot of our guys are on commission-based stuff. So it's like, you know, our overhead's not as big as it might seem because you know, people are making, you know, if we make money, they make money. That's what it comes down to. And things are still selling as of right now. And I like how you mentioned that, you know, there's typically a 6-month lag. I'm a believer in that as well. And, you know, I've got a 10 unit apartment complex that I just put up for sale like last week. And I think I've got about 600,000 in equity in it. So, you know, I'm like, man, you know, this apartment complex cash flow is really good. In fact, it doesn't even have a mortgage payment. I negotiated a seller finance with no mortgage for 3 years. But I'm like at the point where I'm like, dude, you know what? I want to still be ready for this event that I think is inevitable. I think it's inevitable with mortgage forbearance. I think it's inevitable with just the way things are. I think we've got, you know, 6 months of, you know, people figuring out what they're going to do, how this is like everyone, to me anyways, this is just my perspective. I think for the next 6 months, you're going to have this uncertainty where, you know, people don't know how they're going to respond. That's why the first thing I was asking you was, hey, how are people acting right now? Like being let free. And I think you're going to have that for 6 months of people just kind of figuring things out. And then for us, I don't know if Atlanta's the same, but the summer is the best time to buy and sell. Right. That's just when the most transactions happen. So I think we got the summer propping us up. I think we got stimulus propping us up. I think we're going to have all these things, PPP. I think we're going to have all these things the next 6 months that really kind of hold us together. And I'm anticipating things just kind of remain steady. But then once that stuff kind of stops, what happens? Right. And that's what I want to be prepared for. Maybe they'll keep doing stimulus and friggin' prop it up for the next year and a half. I don't know. Like, even if they do, I'm okay in that environment. But if they don't and things really hit the fan, I want to be prepared for it.
Yeah. Your confidence is contagious. And anyways, I know we need to start wrapping up because your time is precious. And I greatly appreciate you having a conversation, even though we're not really talking a lot about real estate techniques and things like that. It's more mindsetting and shifting and business and et cetera. Like this has been a great interview. I am so well pleased to have had you on and we don't even know each other, just organically just reached out.
Actually, as long as it makes top three, I'll be good, dude.
Dude, I'm hoping so. I'm hoping so. The rankings are going up. I'm going kind of like you all in on YouTube. I'm all in on like Instagram and this podcast. So I'm just trying to balloon it up.
Right.
Like right now, it's just like a passion project. So
nice.
It's costing me money, like $3,000 a month.
And well, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
It's good passion.
Absolutely.
Every passion has a price.
Yeah, it's either that or golf. And I'm like, you know, I can learn more doing this. Look, man, so let's go with this. I'm going to go off on a wild tangent. I haven't done this anymore, but I can tell you're highly intelligent. Your confidence is great. Like, let me just ask you some questions to just kind of see what your viewpoints are on certain things. So obviously I'd ask you, do you agree that entrepreneurship is a lonely sport? And you gave that answer and said no. What do you feel like is the most precious thing in your life? Like whatever that thing is. What is the most precious thing you have in your life that you are working on, that you are trying to become better at? It might be two questions there. I don't know, but feel free to have this any way you want.
Man, you know, for the most precious thing, and I mean, the easy answer is to say family. And that obviously is the most precious, family, faith, all those things. And to go in a different direction, I kind of was having this thought, and this is what I have for YouTube and Instagram all the time, just random thoughts. And I'm like, but I don't know. This ain't even the question, but it was a random thought that relates to it. It's like, is it right to, you know, say that, oh man, the only thing that matters to me is my family?
Right.
Because to me, this seems kind of selfish. It's like, man, if the only thing that really matters to you is your family, that's pretty selfish. Like at the end of the day, isn't it more important to care about everyone and other people? Like, you know, if you're only focused on providing for your family, what about everyone else? And so that was just a random thought. And so if I had to give another answer to the question of like, you know, what do you hold most precious? I would just say it's like all my relationships. You know, I really do look at this COVID situation. And my first thought as a business owner with a lot of employees, obviously we got over $100,000 with PPP. But even before the PPP was announced, I was like, how do we keep everyone's job? Like that was my first thought that crossed my mind, because we do have so many people that depend on us. You know, I've had people move from California quit their jobs to work from, like, I've had many people make great sacrifices because they believe in my vision and, you know, the company. And so that was my first thought, was like, okay, I know that this is bad. Like, I knew it was going to be really bad. And I was like, so how do I keep everyone employed during this time? What do we got to do? And, you know, I think that's what's most important to me. It's not, at the end of the day, it's not looking at the balance sheet and the net profit. It is, what impact are we making on not only in our community, but like all the people that we really, you know, employ, like the people that we're really seeing day to day the most, my employees. How do we make an impact on their family? I think that's what I hold most precious as a business owner.
That's awesome, man. Kind of a, there's a story of Milton Hershey. I think he had, don't hold me to it, my former business partner had researched him a lot. He wanted to be a filmmaker and whatnot. And that was one of the projects he wanted to tell, narrate about that story. But Milton Hershey had, in a certain economic climate, he decided that he's just going to give as much as he can to keep the town of, I guess, what is now Hershey's afloat and things like that. And, sounds like that's kind of your mentality. Like, what can we do to help others? Do unto others as I've done unto myself. So on.
And I had people, you know, I'm in a lot of masterminds, and I had guys who were like instantly, and everyone, I'm like, we've been in this for like a week. Like, that was the conclusion you came up with. Like, how? You know, it's like, well, yeah, we got to lay everyone off. And I'm like, that was like the last thing in my mind of doing, you know? But you asked the second question on like, what am I trying to improve on the most? And for me, this quarantine has been really good for me. I've spent 2 months just literally in this home office, you know, not talking to anybody and just thinking about like, hey, where's this world going? Like, how do I become a better entrepreneur or business owner? Like, what's the future look like? And as I was doing that, I realized that, dude, social media is like way, this digital real estate. That's what I call social media, digital real estate. It's free. Anyone can buy it. And you have this, the currency is attention. You know, how do I get more attention? Because that's what leads to revenue, is attention. I looked at it and I had totally ignored YouTube before quarantine. You know, I was just focused on Instagram. That was really it, to be honest. Like, you know, I had a Facebook and whatever. So it also was without very much strict strategy. It was just like, hey, you know what? I'm going to put out what I feel like putting out. This is what it is. And during quarantine, it opened my eyes because I don't even know how I went down the rabbit hole, but I started watching YouTube and I started seeing what all these other people were doing. I'm like, holy crap, YouTube's crazy. And I was hearing what, you know, like these guys were making from YouTube ads. And I was seeing just all these. I was like, dude, YouTube's the way to go. You know, like, oh, YouTube literally will pay you for your views. I was like, Instagram don't pay me a dollar for any content I put out. I'm like, this sucks. Yeah. And so that was motivating. I'm like, dude, if you're going to pay me to put out content, I'll put out the freaking best content you can imagine. And so opening up to YouTube was great. And then I had one of my buddies tell me about TikTok. He's like, you got to do TikTok. And I was like, dude, that's for like 12-year-olds. I'm not going to do that. And he was like, do it. And I had heard Gary Vee talking about it forever. And I was like, you know what? I'll just do it. And then like, I'm at 59,000 followers in a month and a half. I was like, man, I have 20,000 Instagram followers, and that took me like 3 years, and I got 60,000 in a month and a half. I was like, this is crazy. And it made me realize that social media is kind of like, I guess, business. It's like what was cool yesterday, and like it's not going to be that way forever. You know, MySpace didn't last forever. Snapchat, you know, Instagram is the hot thing right now, but it's like, they're not going to be the hot thing forever. You know, you're going to have, if TikTok ends up being the next hot thing, luckily I was an early adapter. And now it's like, all right, all those, you know, kids in college and high school, they want to go into real estate investing. Yeah. I'm the guy. And YouTube's interesting because it's like, YouTube isn't really social media. At the end of the day, YouTube is more just a search engine. And that's when it really flipped the switch for me. It was like, I'd seen my wife on YouTube, like throughout our marriage, she loves watching YouTube. I was like, that is so stupid. Like I never watched it. Right. And once I realized that like people literally go onto YouTube just to search for the answer to everything, I was like, huh, I thought they just did that on Google. And then I was like, wait, Google owns YouTube. And then I looked at it, I'm like, wait, Google and YouTube combined for 98% of search. I was like, wow. So if somebody wants to go search how to flip a house, how are they doing it? And I'm like, they ain't doing it on Instagram. You can't search how to flip a house on Instagram. I'm like, what am I doing with like, I'm wasting my time doing like trying to work so hard towards Instagram. And then it was like, I'm going all in on YouTube. And it was like one of those things. I didn't hesitate. I'm like, what camera do I need? What are these guys? I just started studying all the guys and I'm like, I'm going all in. So that's what I've learned. That's what I'm working on most right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, last business question. I like that. Actually, I might need to get a recommendation from you for a camera. I need to get one myself because I'm planning on doing more as well. Last business question. I always like to talk about people's failures, their greatest failures, their struggles or whatever. What do you feel like your greatest struggle or failure was and how did you overcome it?
Okay, so...
Good question towards the end.
Yeah. I did a video on this and I'll preface by saying I've had two failures. Number one was I revealed like the draft was like my biggest failure up to that point in my life. I got drafted way later than I thought. And then baseball itself is just the game of failure, nonstop. You know, you get out 7 out of 10 times and you're a stud. So I'm very used to failure just through baseball. That game is humbling, man. You think you're really good and the next day you strike out 3 or 4 times and you're like, I suck. So in business, I really had my first dose of failure in 2019. And I talk about it in the Think Realty article a little bit, but they didn't really go in depth about why. But up until that point, I was literally just crushing it. And I was riding, you know, the wave of appreciation in, you know, the country. So it's like even flips that I went over budget on or, you know, I misjudged and took for a while to sell, like, I still made money or broke even due to appreciation. So appreciation hit a lot of my flaws. And back in the end of 2018, when, you know, the government decided to raise interest rates for freaking whatever reason, that killed us in Vegas. I don't know how it affected you guys, but like, you didn't feel it? Yeah. And I know California and Vegas, and they were hit pretty good from it. And so I noticed like instantly people just stopped buying. I was like, holy crap, this is nuts. And I had bought all these properties and I got like pretty much drunk on appreciation because I was in 2018, I would buy a property. I'm not kidding you. Every single one made 10 to 20 grand more than I thought. In 2018, Vegas had the most appreciation in the United States. So I was looking at deals and I was like, I bought 140 some deals that year. I was looking at deals early on in the year, doing them the right way. I'm like, okay, you know, comps are 200. That's what we're going to do. And then I started getting super aggressive because I was getting 220 for them. And I was like, dude, this thing's going to get 220, even though the comps weren't there yet.
Right.
And I was right, dude. I was making a lot of money. And so I did that at least like 50, 60, 70, 80 homes the first 3 quarters of the year. Then come quarter 4, I had to pay the piper for my misdeeds. And I ended up holding all these friggin' properties. Thankfully, I made a bunch of money. But come time to pay the piper, I lost on a lot of those houses because they sat and dropped prices, hard money caught, well, private money, hard money, whatever. All those things ate me up. And I think between all the bad deals I sold, I probably lost $500,000 in bad deals. So, you know, number one, it was a big learning experience. And I'm thankful for it because, you know, I had yet to really experience losing money in the flipping game. I'd always been very disciplined with my numbers. I was always like not playing the appreciation game. It's what I teach my students. I'm like, guys, do not do what I did. Right. Would I do it again? Yeah, I would, you know, because I made a lot of money. I learned the mistakes, whatever. But it was good because at the end, you know, once I sold all those bad deals, I learned a lot of things. I was like, all right, we will not play on appreciation. Also, it led me into wholesaling because I was like, dude, I need some capital quick to pay for these losses. And so up until that point, I didn't wholesale at all. I was only fix and flip. And so that led me into wholesaling, which has been great. Now we have a hybrid model, which I like. But, you know, it prepared me, especially for now in this time of Corona, where, you know what? I'm not sitting on bad flips that I overpaid for because I've been disciplined ever since I lost all that money. So, you know, we're still making profit on all the homes we sell right now because we're not, we don't, prices haven't gone down yet. Even if they go down, you know, call it 10, 20 grand, okay, I break even or only make a little bit. So what? That's not a big deal. Versus had I been banking on appreciation and this, and we were headed for appreciation again. 2020, we were headed for double digit appreciation again before all this happened. It was crazy. We had like 1.3 months of inventory. So I was like, oh man, like this is gonna be really good. But yeah, that's my big failure is that I didn't practice what I preached on that front because I got kind of drunk on appreciation. I had to pay the piper for all those bad deals I bought. But all my private lenders did get paid their full amount, you know? The deals would have probably made money or broke even had we been like JV partners and I wasn't paying all this interest, but because I held them so long and I still at that point was paying 3 points, 12% on all these deals, I ended up owing a lot of money and they made a ton of money. And you know, that's when actually we renegotiated was after all that. I go, guys, I'm going to show you the balance sheet. Like, this is what happened. I just want you guys to know I bought those deals bad and, you know, you guys still got all your money, but we're going to have to change the structure because this market's much different than before. And they were totally, they're like, look, we respect you even more. The fact that you've shown you're going to pay us back even when things aren't looking good.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the analogies and everything you're putting into this. Like, it's just so many principles of stewardship. Like, that's, yeah, man. I mean, it's honorable. Like, first and foremost, it's honorable and it's integritable. So thanks for sharing that with my audience. Sometimes it's so hard to talk about your failures. And when you publicize it, it is what it is. But yeah, man, I mean, that's, thank you for being humble. Yeah. So, I guess to wrap things up, I always end with pop culture questions. Not that we couldn't have a more human conversation here that was completely not even, we didn't even prepare. Like, I send all my guests, you know, send me an email that says, send me bullet points, things like that. I just did a little research, figured I wanted to have an organic conversation with you, just learning about one another. But yep. I'll always end my podcast with three or four questions about pop culture because let's face it, I was born in 1982. I'm a product of the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s as a young man. So I'm a big movie buff, I'm a music buff, and I love to read books. So my three questions start off with is, what's your favorite book and why?
My favorite book and why? It's my own book, dude. I'm just kidding. Yeah. You know, if I'm not going to give the, once again, the generic answer, which I would give is the Bible. That's the most important book. I don't know if that's what your listeners are looking for this pop culture answer, but,
well, it could be business. It could be Bible. It could be anything. Yeah, whatever,
it would be the Bible, but I'll give you another one. I think for me, the book I always give to people the most is called The Millionaire Next Door. You know, I'm sure you've read it. It's a great book. And I think it just shows that the guys who, you know, you don't think are wealthy are. And the guys who, you know, flaunt and have all the bling, they're usually not.
Right. I agree. All right. What's your favorite movie or documentary? And why is that your favorite?
Okay. My favorite movie... There's so many good ones. I'm kind of a movie guy too, but I'll give you an off-brand movie that most people have never seen. It's called MacGruber. Have you ever seen it?
That's so funny, man.
Yeah, I love that movie, dude. Yeah. I probably watched that movie more than any other movie and most people have never seen it. Maybe they've seen the SNL skits, but dude, that movie just kills me. Everything about it, every scene.
Yeah, I love senseless comedies like that. Just something to veg to. It's like, ah, this is why I want to relax. Just so.
Yeah, it's just so stupid. Yeah. But my favorite business movie, I love The Founder. I love that movie. I love watching him just freaking build McDonald's to what it was.
Fun fact about that movie, they filmed that in my hometown out here in Douglas. Or I don't live there anymore. I moved about a year ago. But Douglasville, back where I met your homie Patrick. I don't know if you guys are nice. Friends or not. But yeah. They that McDonald's, they basically built one freestanding on a lot and like basically redressed it up for every single McDonald's shot. So that was the same McDonald's in every single shot, just formatted to look different. So it was kind of cool seeing that live.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. What's your favorite music? What's a shameless song or type of music you listen to just because you love it? And maybe somebody would not identify you listening to that kind of music.
So it's funny, before all the Corona stuff, I would post every day me working out, just one clip, just to basically show people that, like, hey, this is freaking what I'm doing. Like, I practice what I preach. And I always do a Christian song. I pretty much, at this point, only listen to Christian music. And I love listening to worship music. I love listening to just normal Christian music, pop Christian music. They got a lot of, like, EDM Christian music now that's pretty cool. So I always listen to that, but it's funny because when I was growing up, I only listened to rap and hip hop and R&B, and my favorite rapper was T.I. Freaking every T.I. song, every album, like everyone just knew that T.I. was my guy. And so I'll still occasionally just freaking, I'll be working and then out of nowhere, I'll just like Spotify, I'll be like, you should listen to T.I. And I'll be like, you're right, Spotify, I should. You know, I'll just start blasting the classics. They are just so, now that like I'm a father and like I know what he's saying, I'm like, holy cow, this is like not good. But
you're like, you know, turn on Hillsong.
Yeah, I'm like, this is what was I listening to? I still like it, but dang, man, yeah. You gotta chill out, T.I.
That's awesome. Well, look, dude, this has been a fantastic podcast. Where can everybody find you and find more about you? And just for the people that, you know, are in my audience, if they haven't heard from or heard about you,
yeah.
Where can they find you?
I would say the number one thing I want you guys to do is go subscribe to my YouTube channel. And that's my big focus. Like I said, I'll be putting out my best content there. And just search my name, Ryan Pineda. But, you know, for all the other social medias, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn. You can just find me at All Star Investor. That's my handle on all of them. And, you know, I'm pretty receptive to DMs, you know? So if you send me a DM on Instagram, not TikTok, I get, man, those like 12 to 15 year old kids blow me up. I can't even look at them all. But, yeah, send me a DM on Instagram if you guys want to chat. And, you know, as far as the rest of the businesses go, I'm happy to do business with anyone, whether it's coaching, whether it's, you know, if you're in the Vegas area and you're an agent, come join the brokerage. If you got a deal in Vegas or Tucson or Big Bear, those are the markets we're in. And if you need tax work done, you know, we've got the tax work too at TrueBooks. So yeah, we can do business in some type of way, most likely.
Right on, right on. Look, guys, if for the audience listening, if you subscribe to Ryan's YouTube channel on your phone immediately after you listen to this, if you're listening to it on your phone, take a screenshot of that, tag Ryan is an All-Star Investor and Brandon G. Thompson in the same tag or whatever you call it. But post that on Instagram. Post that subscription to you, his YouTube channel on Instagram. Tag both of us in it. I'm going to give you a Flip Your Future book. I'm going to mail that to you. That's Ryan's book. We'll mail you a free copy just for doing that. So
nice. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Now let me go. Now watch me go broke. Every 20,000 of your listeners are going to start posting this. And I'm like, no. We'll limit it.
Tell them you'll email them a Kindle version.
I'll limit it to five people. First five people that does this.
First five.
send a book out. Ryan, dude, thank you so much. This has been amazing. This has been a great conversation. I love, like I said, your integrity. I love that you're educating people, you're inspiring them, and you're giving them hope. That's my mission as well. And I would say it's always a pleasure, but I just met you, so. Thank
you. Yeah. Cool, man. Appreciate you having me on, dude.
Absolutely. Take care and see you later.